a continuation of the history interview with Jackie Leno Grant, former Native American Program Director at Eastern Oregon University. So we're talking about the Native American Mentoring Program now. They meet every other week at school. Mm-hmm. They try to have contact during the off week, and it's been very successful. How many, just round numbers, you know, it's grown, is mm-hmm. my understanding, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. I've met people around campus that I wouldn't have expected to be in that,
yeah.
and they're just excited about it.
Yes,
so
they are. It has grown. We started out with 8 mentors. And I wish I could remember, I think we're in our 4th or 5th year. I think it's in its 5th year, or maybe 6th year coming up. Anyway, started out with 8, and I think they've had over 20. The last year I was here, we had about 22, I believe. So it has grown, and it's been... The neat thing about a mentoring program like this is that it is a win-win for everybody, because the college student gets... Anyone who becomes a mentor for someone gets way more back than they ever put in terms of time, just because it's so satisfying, and you learn about... In some cases, you're learning about another culture, you're building a friendship, and you know you really are making a difference in a young person's life. And young people need, they certainly need their parents, and they need their grandparents and all their family. They also need other caring adults who are willing to spend some extra time with them and have fun and go bowling or whatever.
It's a tough period, and that's a tough school, that Sunridge Middle School.
It is.
There are a lot of Native parents who would rather not see their children go there at all.
Yes.
How do you measure success for something like that? Are there milestones that you can tell that this is working? Obviously, the principal continues to have you back.
Right.
And I know the faculty there have been very in favor of the program.
Mm-hmm.
They may have seen
mm-hmm.
success in their students over it.
Yeah. Well, we're hoping, you're right, we're hoping that the success, we can measure it by more students going on to high school that are prepared and doing better in high school. That's going to take somebody to look at the data, and which I don't know if anyone's done that yet, but... my guess would be, my kind of anecdotal guess, is that, yeah, we probably do have some students who are going on. We want to keep them out of trouble. We don't want them to have principal referrals or juvenile authorities referrals. We want them to go into high school feeling a little more confident in their abilities to be a good student. And the last year that I was in the program and got to really be hands-on with the mentoring program, those mentees, there were over 80% of them that were involved in extracurricular activities, sports, theater, music. Maybe they were doing dancing in their community. I mean, so they were, these kids were involved in, any parent knows or adult knows that kids who are involved and connected will stay out of trouble. Maybe they might experiment with, you know, alcohol and drugs and those kinds of things, but they don't stay there long. They'll move on and, you know, kind of keep their bearings.
Now, if it's been going on 5 or 6 years or more, have we seen anybody in college now from the first year?
You know,
I
don't know that, but I do know that when I've gone over to Umatilla to do some college presentations, I would have students in that presentation that probably wouldn't have been there if they hadn't been in the mentoring program. They told me that. I was in the mentoring program. I learned about college in the mentoring program. And I'm going to college. And that is, I guess that you can measure some success there. Now, that's a milestone. I think what would be great to find out is, are they in college? And if so, where and how are they doing? And, you know, maybe getting them involved to be a mentor.
Well, wouldn't that have been a checkmark milestone? Because if the goal was to get them through high school to get to college.
Exactly, yeah.
Then maybe that succeeded.
That succeeded, yeah.
Now, those students come to campus.
They do.
I toured them through the theater year before last.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We have a, Eastern has a Native American Higher Education and Career Awareness Day, which we invite Native students to come to campus, and we really try to get faculty and different departments involved in that, because we want the kids who come for that day to see what a campus is about and to see people like yourself, like, oh, wow, here's a Native student, they're going to school, they're, look, and they're showing me around this campus and they're doing this, I guess I could do this too.
I have more than 15 nieces and nephews in that Sundance group was almost 45, 50 students that day.
It was huge, yeah.
And tons of them walking by me, hi, Uncle Mike.
Yeah, that's great. Uh-huh. That's powerful. That is so powerful for those young students to see other Native people on a college campus in particular. I think it's really critical, because sometimes we forget that we just don't, you know, we just, that we are really there, you know.
Well, I was directing my senior show at that time,
yes.
So we had set pieces. It wasn't just the boring tour through the theater, you know. And we did have a mask-making class in the afternoon for some
wonderful.
Of them to come to. It
that
must be picking
wonderful.
Up.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sure they're picking up stuff. Mm-hmm.
Does this mentoring program, do they do cultural activities with those students? Do they do any powwowing or have any traditional activities or cultural activities on their...
We did try to fold in some of those, like for the powwow, we tried, the mentors would be here for the powwow and meet up with their mentees. I don't know how well that worked, and we tried to also do an event over in their community, and I would encourage, get the list of the events going on over in Umatilla, for example, and say, okay, here's this weekend, you know, Root Feast, or this weekend, this, go over there. You know, you might see mm-hmm. your mentee, or call and make a contact and see if it's okay to meet up over there. So we tried that. I don't know if there's any, it may have been developed more formally this past year since I've been away, but I think that is a nice component to that. Again, just kind of building those relationships.
How about your peers in Native American education around the state or the area? What kind of relationships did you develop with other college level professionals who were working toward the same goals as you were?
I think I've got a lot of good contacts around the state, and as chair of the coalition, those are a lot of college folks come to those meetings, and we try to work towards, you know, recruitment and retention of Native students and advocates for Native staff on campuses. So have been very fortunate to get to know people that way. And so, you know, there's a contact at OSU, or more than one, and U of O and Lane Community College and Southern Oregon University and Bend. We're trying to Bend, Central Oregon Communication College, Community College. It's funny, I'm not picking on Bend, but, you know, if you lose your person there, if you only have one contact and you lose that person and the institution doesn't get somebody back in there, then it's hard. You just kind of start back at square one. But I think that's the true with anything. So,
do these people or groups meet on a regular basis?
The coalition, the Oregon Indian Coalition, we meet on a quarterly basis. And we try to meet, we tried to meet on college campuses, but that doesn't always work out. But we do try to get around, lately we've been in the metropolitan area, Portland, Salem, and Eugene area. But we've met in Bend. As the chair, I can sit on and join the government-to-government education cluster, which is the 9 tribes and the state meet. They meet about 9 Oregon tribes. They meet on a formal basis about, I think, between 4 and 6 times a year. And so as the coalition chair, I can join in and just sit in on those meetings. Sometimes I'll take agenda items or topics to ask them for input or help or whatever. So it's a good connection. So there's a lot of, it's a good way to kind of keep the state connected for Indian students.
Let's talk about the old Indian Festival of the Arts. Mm-hmm. First of all, was that going on when you first moved to town? It seemed like that was still going in the early 70s.
It was. Yes, and we actually just, one day we were walking downtown and we kind of stumbled, we'd missed the big parade, Steve and I, and we'd stumbled onto the arts and crafts, and we realized what it was, and it was like, oh my goodness, we couldn't believe that we had actually, so we did attend it one year without kind of even knowing what it was. It was a wonderful event.
That wasn't held on campus.
It wasn't held on campus.
Where'd they have it?
They had, well, downtown, did the parade went downtown, and they did a lot of the arts and crafts, and the vendor setups were all downtown. But the camp, the encampment, was at the old middle school, which is about two blocks to our west of Eastern Oregon State College campus. And it was in the middle school area. Just, it was a nice grassy area. It was big, and they had, I think, I'm not sure why they chose that area, but it was a very nice place for them to set their encampment up.
Uh-huh.
And I never saw the encampment because we didn't know, you know, it was there, but did do the arts and crafts program.
Was that a weekend, 2 days?
You know, I think it was actually a 2 or 3 day event. And it was huge. It brought in the organizers. I am only familiar with one organizer of that. Her name is June Poitras. She's now deceased. She is the mother of Diane Walker, who lives in Union, and she's also been a Union County resident for many, many years. Came to Eastern in the early years, was very instrumental in forming the club and being a part of the club, and did the Root Feast and all of that.
Were they of Native background?
Yes, she is a member of the Klamath tribe. Her husband, I do not believe, is Native. And they have 6 children, I think. And so her mother, Diane's mother, June Poitras, was one of the initial organizers of the Indian Festival of Arts. And it was a outstanding program, brought in big name people. It's my memory that I can't think of them right now, but some very famous kinds of people. The Indian actor, was there an Indian actor that played on, I'm going to say Tonto, but I'm not sure if that was the show.
Jay Silverhill.
Played on
the Lone Ranger.
Yeah, the Lone Ranger. He was a
he
guest.
Played Oregon
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah. And I didn't know all of this, but some big names. And the neat thing about the Indian Festival of Arts was the whole community of La Grande, and probably Union, and maybe the smaller towns around Cole, Embler, they were all involved in it. And I think it was the 80s, where I had a few townspeople ask me, can we bring this back? You know, we'd like to revive this, and how would we go about doing that? And of course, my advice was, well, I think that's a great idea. Let's go talk to the tribes, you know, let's go talk to the Umatilla tribes, let's go talk to, but it never, you know, never made that next step. But I think, you know, I think there's a desire to bring that back.
Because they didn't go to the tribes, or
well,
because nobody took the bait,
nobody took the initiative to just
to
get, yeah,
involved.
Maybe to get headed up, yeah, to head it up. That might be it.
Did you, well, what else do you know about that? You knew a lot more than I thought.
Okay, let's see. I know some of the townspeople who went to that festival. I'm having a hard time. Mrs. Lester, oh my gosh, what is Mrs. Lester's name? She's an elderly lady here in La Grande. I'll think of her first name. A very nice lady. And she came to the festival every year and just spoke highly of just the wonderful things that it did, not only for the community and the economy of Eastern Oregon, or this part of Eastern Oregon, but also just for building relationships between Native and Anglo people. And she actually gave me a couple of the necklaces. She goes, I bought these and I love these, but I don't wear them and they're so beautiful, they need to be worn. And she gave me a couple of her necklaces that she bought. And
well, this would be helpful for the Native economy as well, weren't they? Did they not sell their crafts and arts?
Yeah, they did. They did.
What could you find there?
Oh my gosh. There was beaded items, pottery items, leather items, just
pretty much the gamut of things you could find at a powwow.
At a powwow, yeah. Since we stumbled on, Steve and I actually stumbled on it. I do remember it was the last day of their festival, and I want to say that they had told us it was like a 3-day festival, and we must have not been in town, or we didn't live here at that time, or we were away or something. Maybe that was when we were just kind of checking Eastern Oregon out, but we did stumble upon it, and so some of the vendors had left. But you're right, the Native people could sell their crafts as well, and it was open to anyone, and they had good participation.
Was there drumming and singing, or
yes, and they did that up at the middle school, and I don't know if that happened in the evenings, because we didn't go up there to see the encampment or weren't a part of that. Diane Walker could give you a lot of good information about that, as well as the late Mrs. Lester. She probably could, too.
Was that done by the time you came to work for Native American program?
It was. It was, so, and so I'm not sure which year it faded out. I was at Eastern. The last time I saw Mrs. June Poitras was at Grand Ronde Powwow. I think one of the very first powwows at Grand Ronde. And I saw her there and introduced myself to her, and she recognized me. My dad knew her from early days. I'm not sure how they knew one another, but Indian country is pretty small.
Right.
And it was thankfully for Diane's input. You know, she goes, well, my mom was a big organ, you know, one of the main, I think they had a board that made up of Native people and non-Native people, the townspeople. I'm not sure how much the college was involved with it at that time. They may not have been very involved. I don't know. And June served on this board. Mrs. Poitras served on this board.
But then that means that it was still going on when you moved to town.
Well, it must have just been going out at that time, or maybe that was one of the last years. That's a good, I'd never thought about that that way.
It'll be interesting to get those photo albums and the video to my sister and get those copied, because she'd be able to identify a lot of names. A lot of those people are gone.
Are gone now. Yeah, and I wish I knew what was on those reel to reels. And I was always going to just sit and watch them, go to the library, you know, and sit and watch them. Of course, I just never took the time to do that, but maybe that can be something, you know, for the future, but I'm hoping there's some footage on there about the Indian Festival of Arts, or some early history of the program and students, because you're right, there's a lot of people that were involved who are no longer with us. So,
did you have any involvement or knowledge of other Native Americans living in the community, just as a community member, or almost all of your contacts academic?
Yeah, well, I didn't really have a lot of knowledge of other Native American families living in Union County or the Grand Ronde Valley. And a lot of our contacts were with Anglos through our business, I suppose, through my husband. He's Anglo, so, and through the business. So we made connections that way. Once in a while, when we lived in Wallowa County, there was one family, and she was Native but not of Oregon, and so we would get together and our kids would do play group, and we kind of got together. But coming to Eastern Oregon and living in La Grande and in Willow County both, when you saw another brown face, you all of a sudden you, okay, everything is okay with the world.
I know about that.
And you know that feeling, don't
right.
you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, it's just that familiarity. And it's, I mean, you don't even have to know each other, but there's just that familiarity. So I can remember kind of being very homesick when we first came back from the from my home at Grand Ronde up to Willow County and Union County, and just like, you know. And of course, I kind of knew Umatilla was close by, and that was kind of the saving, because we went over there to the clinic before we had insurance or anything. We could go to the clinic, and I could take the kids, our little kids, to the clinic. They were all small then. And
you're talking about Yellow Hawk.
Yeah, about Yellow Hawk. Yeah, so we could receive, services once our tribe was restored, and which 1980. I should know this by heart. I should know. It's either, I think it's 83. I think it's 83, but it's 86 stands out too. So you'll have to.
No worries on that.
Yeah. Well, I should.
We know your Bible.
So once that happened, then we could get services at Yellow Hawk. So.
Then finally, I guess, what stole you away from Eastern? Although, of course, we see you here every couple of weeks. What brings you back to the Grand Ronde Valley every now? Oh, I'm sorry, what took you back to Grand Ronde?
My home. A position opened up as their division manager for their education department, and they have a really big education department. We have programs, preschool, Head Start through graduate level scholarship programs for our tribal members. So I'd always wanted to work for my tribe, and that was an opportunity that came up, and it was a good time for me to be there. Just some things personally that happened in my family. I lost my mother last year, and being the oldest of five, you are kind of, at least in my family, it's the oldest one who kind of makes sure things get done, makes sure things stay together, people get what they need, and so I kind of have that responsibility. But the job opened up, and so I applied and got the interview, and I thought, wow, this is good, because I've applied for other jobs there and hadn't gotten interviewed or gotten an interview and turned the job down, but actually accepted their offer. They really wanted me to come, and it was time to leave Eastern. I was hoping that Eastern needed to, have some new ideas and new blood, if you will. I was hoping maybe they would felt like I'd kind of come to the end of my support at Eastern, and so things just kind of worked out that way. And that's, working for your tribe is it's a good experience. For me, it's been a really great experience. The job is great, and the staff is really good. I'm certainly, you can always go back to your home, but now I have two homes, because I miss Eastern Oregon. I mean, Eastern Oregon, the land, after I spent about, I think it was in my second year in Eastern Oregon, where I really began to understand more about the land and really just fell in love with the land. And then, of course, the Native people are so intricately connected to the land that then got to know the people and learned, And so now I just tell people, I have two homes, I've got an Eastern Oregon home and a Western Oregon home, so, yeah.
Are you a member actively involved in the Eastern Alumni Association?
Let's see, I think I am a member. I don't know how active I don't know if they have dues or things like that.
Yeah, I think we're all members.
I think we're all members. I don't know how active, I would say I'm probably not active right now, but I think, they just, if they asked me to do something, I probably would help them do something. Yeah. So.
Well, anything we're forgetting to talk about?
Gosh.
I've covered the major areas. And we have a few more things to talk about. Last couple of things we should talk about are, there was an American administrator here at the school. Tell me about him.
That was Dr. Jerry Blanche, and he was a Dr. Jerry Blanche. He was our director of college relations, so he was administrator at the time, and he was a member of the Choctaw Nation, enrolled Choctaw. So he really took, I received a lot of the Native American program, and the students, Spilia, I received a lot of support from him and his wife, Doris, who was elementary middle school music teacher over at the middle school here in La Grande. And they would have, we'd have Spilia potlucks out there at their house, and he edited or compiled a book called The Native American Reader. And he took royalties from that book to start a Native American scholarship called the First Citizens Award. And myself, Jerry, Jack Johnson, who was the director of financial aid at the time, Kelly Yenzer, who was also, Kelly was the director of the student alumni or kind of grants, you know, out there for grants, getting grants and things. And we might have had a student on that panel. Anyway, there was a panel of us, and we got this scholarship going, and with Jerry's royalties. And Dave Gilbert.
You said that was endowed?
Endowed. It's an endowed scholarship. And at the time, Dave Gilbert was the president of Eastern, and he was also a very big supporter of the Native American program. And as he was a faculty in his early days of the Indian Education Institute, and taught several Umatilla students. He was a physics, and he had several Native students in his physics classes. Mike Farrell, or I could name one.
The late Mike Farrell.
Yes,
wow.
The late Mike Farrell.
Huh.
And so he was, Dave was really supportive, but this endowed scholarship, faculty could contribute to it, of course. We'd get what we call Crayola money, and I think the university would get money from Crayola Foundation for whatever. Well, Dave Gilbert actually, a few years in a row, gave us that money. I don't know if it was $10,000 pieces at a time. And then we got our biggest donation from Union Pacific Railroad. And I was always wanting to go back and ask them for another donation for the scholarship, but they were so supportive, and I mean, it was, I would say $50,000 to get that going. It is an endowed scholarship. It's for Native students who can prove, they do have to have documentation, but the documentation can be a tribal ID card if they're from a possibly a terminated tribe, or a tribe maybe that the records can't get, if we can get a letter stating that they could be descended from an enrolled member. So, and the unique thing about this endowed scholarship is that they'll get it in their first year. If they continue through their second year, the students, and they're doing well, 2.5 GPA, and they're making satisfactory progress, meeting all the criteria, they get a bump up each year. They get the scholarship. It increases by anywhere from $300 to $500. And the whole idea that Jerry had behind that, making it bump up like that, was to, he really felt it was so critical for students to finish the degree. And so the money is an incentive each year for the student to actually, complete that degree. And it's a very good scholarship program, and Eastern, you know, that's a specific scholarship for Native students at Eastern.
What's your awareness of that? How many students did that support as you were,
when I
before
was,
you left?
Before I left, I would say it probably supported anywhere from 8 to 10 students, and I believe the graduates that I can just think about in my head, I think we've had probably 5 graduates that were on that scholarship. So I think it just needs to be maybe possibly better advertised, and been utilized.
Now, the public and alumni can contribute to the
endowment, and we would send out letters asking alumni, Native alumni, to contribute, and people would send, you know, checks. I mean, any amount was always welcomed, and we'd send out thank yous. And
are you aware of any other Native American specific endowments or scholarships on this campus?
Not that specifically.
Okay.
I know there's other scholarships for minorities students,
right. But
that is the only one that I'm aware of for Native students. We have a TAS. We have a Connor Emergency Fund.
Taz Connor?
Well, we named it after Taz, of course,
uh-huh.
But we didn't give it, we just called it the Connor Fund. Leah Connor and her sister, I should know this.
Dora? Her sister.
They, after Taz's passing, they gave the program, when we named Ellicott Hall at the naming, and it's named after the Connor family relation, Ellicott, they gave gifts, of course, and the gift that was to the program was some funds that they had collected. And so we started the Connor Emergency Fund. And so students can access that. It's a short-term loan, really. They can access that if they need to go home or childcare, whatever, pay the light bill, whatever. And we just would have them sign a little contract that they would pay us back. So we'd always have money, kind of a little bit of money in there. And that was, you know, I think that could be advertised more, and we could probably get more money in.
And we're finishing up the interview with Jackie Leno Grant, a former Native American Program Director at Eastern Oregon University. It's July 21st, 2006. So those are the two items that students could access directly of Native American descent. One other item that I'd like to discuss with you is the set-aside in Pierce Library for the Native American collection. How did that happen?
That actually happened through Mark Shadle, who is a faculty on this campus, and probably some other faculty. Patty Cutright, who was Native American herself, she's no longer here. She's back in New York. She was the director of the library at the time, and Mark and Patty got together, and of course I facilitated a little bit and just supported that, but they got together, and the Native American program itself had a large volume of books on Native American topics. And so
you mean the habits already?
We had it already, and it was in our office, and we've had to move to a smaller office, and I did not want the books to not be we needed a place for the books. So Patty found a place in the basement of the library to start this Native American collection. So it started with the programs, the Native American programs collection, and the library cataloged them all and keyed them all into the system and did all that work. And we just donated the books over to them. And then Mark Shadle took that another step further by, he teaches a Native American lit class, upper division lit class, I believe, every year, and he took it a step further and has been adding to the collection. I don't know if he got grant money or something, but so it's a nice collection down there. We were always going to do some sort of dedication and kickoff, and it just never happened. But people are using it, and I just noticed the sign's still up, so the books are still there. The program donated some furniture. Like I said, when we moved to a smaller space, I don't know how this happened, we moved to a smaller space and got more responsibility for more students. Not sure how that happened, but we did that, and so that's when that collection began.
Couldn't be due to funding downsizing. Yeah,
funding downsizing. That's what it was, downsizing. So, but that's a great resource for Union County and the campus. It's got a lot of really good books in it. So,
well, I want to thank you for sharing your stories and experiences with us today.
Thank you, Michael.
Great.